Good evening, everyone. Charles Moskowitz. Happy New Year. Welcome to the program. I'm going to keep
recording
things
in progress.
Thank you. I'm going to keep things very brief tonight, the first night of the broadcast, mainly because it is New Year's Eve and I've got family obligations, so I'm not going to really be able to stay on. I do the program from home and I've got my family here. I simply will note that I am will be doing this program starting Monday, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Standard Time. There will be phone calls received. I will be giving out a phone number. You can make calls. You can join the program. There will be chats on the that you can participate in. My goal here is to develop a live, interactive, nightly experience where we can all get together and talk and chat and interview interesting guests and do all of the things that one would do in a conventional talk show. Now, about a week ago, I started to get notices from YouTube that I was giving warnings and strikes and that sort of thing. Originally, YouTube was going to be the flagship station. I kind of knew that was coming down the pike anyway, but I suppose it's good that it's happened now, just as I begin to launch things, because I know we'll no longer be live streaming on YouTube, even though they said I could go back. I just don't trust YouTube. I don't want to have to worry constantly about censorship. I don't want to be looking over my shoulder every minute, wondering whether they're going to hit me for who knows what. So the flagship station will be Rumble. So please go to Rumble, Charles Moskowitz Rumble, or just go to the website, charlesmoskowitz.com, and please subscribe to the Rumble station because that's where the action is going to be. But in the meantime, the program is also carried by 10 other live streams and about 30 different podcast venues. Platforms, including some of the big ones like iTunes and Stitcher and iHeartRadio and Google. And I'm looking forward in the coming year to developing a good, solid program where we can get together, where we can really examine issues. I can hear from people, get people's chats, find out what's going on out there, and maybe we can together get a sense of where we are as individuals, as a society, as a country, and as a world. What am I about? Okay, I feel a little obligated to talk about that. What I'll say is that I have been doing, in various permutations, talk radio off and on for the past 20 years. I started doing talk radio mainly because I love politics. I love conversation. And I was doing a lot of driving in my work. I've always done delivery work, even going all the way back to when I was a teenager and I used to deliver newspapers. And I used to read the paper as I delivered it every morning. And even up until recently where I do Uber and that sort of thing. But at the time I had a company that required that I be in the car a lot doing deliveries around New England. Eventually, that company became pretty big, and it went national, and then it went belly up, but that's a whole different story. The point I'm making here is that in the process of doing the deliveries, I fell in love with talk radio, and I started listening avidly to certain radio talk show hosts like Jerry Williams, David Brudnoy, Gene Burns, all of whom have passed away. And then, of course, later we had Howie Carr and Rush Limbaugh nationally and Michael Savage and people both on left and right, by the way. I became fascinated with the medium because I felt like not only was this the most pure form of communication where you can just have a direct, uninterrupted, unencumbered, uncensored conversation with general standards that you understood as community standards, but that it was more honest than the received wisdom that you'd get from the newspapers where everything is kind of, you know, handed down to you from on high. And you'd actually hear from people in the street. And if something was happening in the news, there was nothing better than to hear people calling in right off the street and talking about it. You'd get much more insight from real people out working, like I was doing with my deliveries, than I would with some smartass at the Boston Globe or the New York Times. I was really struck by that, by the democracy of it. And I fell in love with it to the extent that eventually I decided to try it out myself. I went to Tufts University in Boston, or in Medford, got a talk radio gig at the college station WMFO, and it was a great experience. And I was interviewing people from the left and the right. I had on Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky and Gloria Steinem, Barney Frank, who I would eventually run against for Congress here in Massachusetts, and a lot of figures on both the left and the right. And it was a great, great and enlightening experience for me. Excuse me. I'm going to bring things up to today because I'll have plenty of time to get into who I am and why I do what I do. All right. Today we are dealing with a society that is extremely censorious and frightened. Excuse me. And in a sense, the Band-Aid was pulled off the wound of some of this with the phenomena that occurred around the election of Donald Trump as president of the United States. Now, I was a supporter of Trump. I still am. Trump kind of embodied a lot of the beliefs and attitudes and feelings and political opinions that I had been promoting for decades up until that point. And his victory was an incredible event, and I believe it was. I believe it's almost providential, quite frankly. There's a moment of awakening for this country. His whole message was that we need to step away from this corrupted establishment, both, you know, Democrat and Republican, conservative and liberal. And in the name of balance and in the name of fairness, we needed to return governing powers to the people where it resides, where this is the American philosophy, that we are endowed by the Creator, not by the state. That God, the Creator, is the great sovereign, and that he gives us as individuals, as imperfect beings, a limited grant of sovereignty. And then we, in turn, establish governments on earth to preserve, protect, and defend that sovereignty. And the way we do that in America, in our American philosophy, because we understand that we are imperfect beings, we are not God, we do it by dividing powers into various silos and then setting them against each other so they compete. And that way we have an opportunity to reside with the genuine power, and that is with the individual. The concept of checks and balances is something that transcends just government also. It's in life. It's part of who we are in the world. We check and we balance our own powers, our own lives, in relation to other people and in relation to other situations. And the result is that you have a tempered, moderate society where rights are not perfect because we're not all, you know, independent empires. We have to live with each other, but yet the power generally resides with us. And I came to believe in Donald Trump represents that. Previously, I had come to understand this. I had always been liberal when I filled out my first tax return as an independent businessman. And I was like, holy mackerel, this is a huge amount of money. I'm proud. I was proud to go into H&R Block and fill out my first tax return. I felt it was my patriotic duty, and I still do. But the amount that I ended up owing was so much that it really wiped out whatever savings I had been able to achieve that year. And that was money that I was going to invest into my company to expand it, which would have resulted in people getting jobs and economic opportunity, which is what I thought this country was all about. And the fact that I had to shell it all out in taxes was a revelation to me. And it made me realize, what exactly is the government doing with this money? And that's what led me in the direction of a sort of a libertarian understanding that really the government had overstepped itself in so many areas, and that the system of checks and balances had been somewhat corrupted, in that you had an overarching establishment that seems to go back and forth between all of the branches, and that there was something not quite right when you had some of the things that I looked at, and I think we all know what I'm talking about here, of monies going to various people and various things, really shocked me. And I really felt that we needed to bring power back to the people. The other event in my life, and this one happened over a long period of time, was that I came to believe in God. And that really set me up on my mission as a human being, and frankly, as a Jew, to find my way in life and my purpose and what it is that in this limited space of time that I'm granted by the King of the Universe, what can I do to make a better world? What can I do to find a path that could somehow contribute to history and to my own? And even that could be a very basic thing. My solution to that eventually was doing the talk radio. That was my outlet for that. And then that led to my writing books. I've written 20 books since then. But belief in God as the sovereign as opposed to the state is the American secular philosophy. It's also important to me religiously, and I came to realize that I cared very deeply about Judaism. I became more observant. I became more aware of Jewish tradition, although I'm not a strictly Orthodox Jew, quite honestly. And I say that with a certain amount of shame, quite frankly. But I came to understand that, at least philosophically, the Jew is someone who respects a covenant between God and the children of Israel, those that we now call Jews. And that we are, as part of that covenant, we are to strive to know God and to walk with God and to converse with God and to study. And we do that through developing strong families, developing education, developing a better code of morality and ethics. And we try to stand in that sense as a light unto our neighbors, our families, our communities, and and all of the nations of the world in the broad sense. And so I've come to work toward understanding that mission as a Jew, as an American. And then the other thing, obviously, is that as an American, America is the ultimate flowering of the Judeo-Christian ethos, the idea that man is limited under God, and that governments as such are limited in their protection of the individual under God, not the other way around, which had been the tradition in the world in all other nations pretty much. And I also came to respect as well Christianity. I came to respect the ministry of Jesus, because Jesus was, I think, the most important figure to ever walk the face of the earth, and that he took the ethos of Sinai, where God revealed the blueprint for how we're to live as individuals and how our nations are to interact with each other. And he brought it to the world. The world today is a Christian world. And I thank God for that. To me, it's divine. It actually, to my mind, actually, you can make an argument that Jesus, very well was the Messiah. Now, I'm not Christian, and I don't accept that in the Christian context. I think that we as Jews have also a parallel and equally significant mission in the world. But I understand that that mission, that ministry and its aftermath brought forth all of the morals and ethics of Sinai, which I believe are divine for the world. Okay, so getting back to Donald Trump, and I'm not going to stay on much longer here. I'm just going to do a brief program. When Trump was elected president, the reaction on the part of the establishment, I think, was severe in that they were shocked that this had happened. It wasn't supposed to happen. And the result was that they took measures to restrict, to make sure it never happened again. It was an excuse to enhance a corrupt and international elite that had been around for a long time and that sought to preserve its position, a position that they had built up pretty much, I think, since the beginning of the 20th century in this country. I trace it to the election of Woodrow Wilson as president in 1912. It's an interesting history. I intend to get into this in depth in coming weeks and months as I launch this program. Suffice to say that what President Trump accurately calls the deep state, the transfer of powers from elected officials who answer to the citizen and who have indirect powers under a constitution, to unelected bureaucracies, unelected people, unelected bureaus, both local, state, national, and international. What I think Steve Bannon brilliantly calls the administrative state, that Trump threatened that. He threatened it because he wanted to return power to the sovereign citizen, because he wanted to do the logical, normal thing that all nations should want to do, and all people should want their nations to do, and even the animal kingdom understands. And that is that he wanted to put the interests of his nation first. He wasn't doing it in a chauvinistic sense to say that somehow America was better than all other nations, even though, quite frankly, we in a way are, in terms of our system and our experience. Because he also advocated that other nations put their interests first as well. It was more of a statement of the importance and the progressive nature of the nation state and of national sovereignty as the best way to protect the rights and the democratic principles and the rights of citizens. And this is something that the deep state despises. They've wanted to undo this. They view nation states as an anachronism, as something that's old-fashioned, something that should be done away with or made impossible, as Karl Marx said, in favor of some kind of an amorphous world order, which leaves in place, you know, the trappings of the nation, but in fact, all power resides outside of the nation and in the hands of unelected international bureaucrats, both in terms of political, financial, and even religious powers. And that this is corrupting, because if you have that kind of concentration of power and you don't have the kind of checks and balances that we expect, you're going to end up in a very dangerous world for freedom. And then when you put on top of that the rise of the artificial intelligence and the technologies around transhumanism and the development of the chip and all these other things, you know, they're going for a full control in the world, and it is a very dangerous thing. Donald Trump challenged that. The fact that he was there was waking people up. People no longer, and of course, the establishment went berserk. They started putting out the usual lies, which is, oh, Trump and we all have something against people of color. And, you know, these things are complete lies. And that, you know, Trump's fascist, really? And all this other crap. And, you know, they were using the powers of their footprint in the media to do that. That's why the censorship started, because they wanted to control that and make sure that that was the only narrative that people heard. And it in many ways is. I believe that they took Trump out with an illegal and unlawful activity that led to his not getting a second term. Anybody who knows Trump haters know that they did this. It's obvious. It was done in broad daylight. That the people who hate Trump are of two categories. The first one are the witting and conscious internationalists who want to stop any movement that is nationalist, is populist, it brings democracy to people, which is what Trump is. And the second is the unwitting people who hear this drumbeat of irrational hate day after day. It's like Chinese torture. And they've gotten swept up in it emotionally. Those are where most of the people that I know. Now, I live in a very blue state, Massachusetts, a very blue city, Boston. I attend a very blue synagogue. My friends are blue. My wife and daughter are blue. Everybody I know, my family, is blue. Our acquaintances and our friends are all blue. And I'm not going to get into details of what happened to me at the time that Trump won. But there were some really unpleasant things that went down both in my professional life and in my personal life at that time because I was an open and unabashed Trump supporter. I was an author of books. I was doing a TV show in Boston at the time, BNN, Boston Neighborhood Network, which is a huge station. I had to change all of that because of this incredible, irrational, really insane reaction to Trump's victory. And I'm not going to get into too much more of that. I'll just say this. Anyone who is a Trump supporter, especially if you come from a blue state like I do and you're surrounded in that, you know what I'm talking about. It was really ugly to the degree that I literally had to change my last name in order to do this program. I mean, Moskowitz was the name of my grandfather who had changed it. And I went back to that name because I had to separate what I do from my family because they could not be associated with me. And I understood that. You know, they've got career jobs. They were a college student in one case. They could not, it was so ugly that they could not be seen as part of someone who was advocating for President Trump. And plus, they don't agree with me. And I understand that and I respect that. So I had to do that. But suffice to say that now that I'm launching this program, and I have done programs, as I said in the beginning, in markets throughout Greater Boston for years. I am operating in a market that is very severely censored. That is clear. I mean, even today I was listening to Sebastian Gorka, who mentioned, and he was an advisor to President Trump. He's a significant conservative philosopher and thinker. He said that he's now seeing that his Twitter account has been cut down by about a third. His Facebook account is being cut. I know that mine have been stopped from growth. I know that my YouTube station was put behind some kind of an algorithm wall because people have contacted me over this past year and have said, gee, I subscribe to you, Charles. And then all of a sudden the subscription disappears somehow magically. Right? And it's more than anecdotal. So I understand the world I'm operating in here. I understand the market I'm operating here. And all I can say is that in that context, yes, I'll be right down. Yeah, I'll be right down, sweetie. I am hoping to proceed in this market. Okay, thank you. Yes, please. Anyways, so that's the market I'm hoping to proceed in. Check out the website, charlesmoskowitz.com. As you can see, I've got a family calling. Happy New Year, everyone. God bless you all. God bless America. I feel, in spite of it all, optimistic and very excited about this venture.
Recording stopped.
Thank you.